Andrew Grieve asked a question. He said, Andrew, are you here? Why am I answering this if you're not here? But he said, isn't there something about every stone will be knocked down or something like that in prophecy? And so I started, but I said I would cover that this week. So what he was referring to was either Ezekiel 26, which is perhaps one of the most explicit Old Testament prophecies about stones falling, or Matthew 24. And so I'll start with the easier one that all of you have heard of, and that's the one in Matthew 24. And I'd like you to open in your Bibles if you're there, because I want to show you something that for me is one of the great blessings of going to the Holy Land. Usually in our journeys through the land of the book, as I call it, the Holy Land, we make our way around until finally we come to the southeastern corner of the Temple Mount. And if you remember, it's a 40-acre platform that would hold many, many football fields. And today, right in the center of it is... Boy, that thing is trying to figure out what I'm trying to do, and it's going to do it better for me. The Dome of the Rock is right there. But we come to this corner right here. This area is called the Wailing Wall, if you've ever heard of it. And there's a plaza right here where people come. And down in this corner, the archaeologists have left a massive kind of pyramid pile of stones. Now, they're not normal stones. They're minimum 1 ton blocks that are all squared off and chiseled that were used to build the massive retaining wall of this Temple Mount, this 40-acre platform. Look what Jesus said about that, starting in verse 1 of Matthew 24. Then Jesus went out and departed from the temple. He was up here prior to the 8th century Dome of the Rock. The Eastern Gate was here, and somewhere in this area, or maybe a little bit, I mean, I'm not sure exactly. There's a great dispute over exactly where Herod's temple was, but it was somewhere there because there was these two entryways that you could come up, underground stairways, and then there was this courtyard around it, and then a closer courtyard, so it probably was not exactly in the middle where the Dome of the Rock is, but right in the center here was the temple, right there. And they came out of the temple precinct area, and his disciples came up to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, do you not see all these things? The temple, the walls, the all the way around. In fact, this whole area here was a forest of columns. Herod, King Herod, the butcher of Bethlehem, Herod, had seen something similar in Athens when he fled Jerusalem, when he was trying to get the emperor to get on his side. And he saw this beautiful building in Athens. It's still there, by the way. If you ever go to Athens, you can still see the building Herod saw. It's not the Parthenon. It's the one down in the Agora area down below. But he saw the columns, and he said, I will make one grander than that. And he did. There was a forest of columns, probably 120 of them. They were probably 60-plus feet tall, and they were adorned, many of them, with gold, because all the pilgrims, all the Jewish people coming back to do pilgrimage in Jerusalem, would leave their offerings of gold as gifts to God. And Herod took them, and he was so rich he didn't need them. He just spread them around, and they had gold olive branches and gold grapes hanging down from it. It was just elaborate. And then the whole top of the temple was covered with gold. So they were kind of, look at verse 2. They said, do you see all these, or verse 1, you see all this? It was just probably glowing in the sunlight. And Jesus said to them, you see all those things? Assuredly I say to you, and here's what Andrew is asking about, verse 2, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be, and what are the last two words of verse 2? Thrown down. Now that takes us to this little pile, this pyramid pile of rocks. Down at the base, this whole area was leveled to the flat pavement level. They took every every part of all the buildings, and the Romans took them and tumbled them over the edge, and they just made it a flat platform and built their own big structure on top of it to pollute what the Jews had had there. And so Jesus said this whole top would just be all cleared off, and he says, it's going to be not one stone left upon another, just the bottom kind of... You ever seen when tornadoes go through? And there's just the slab, like in Oklahoma, because they don't have basements. It's just a slab. That's all that was left up there. But all along the outside here are these piles of rocks. And so I take people that I said... Everybody likes to see fulfilled prophecy. Jesus said in AD 30 that not one stone of this most beautiful structure, one of the most of the ancient world, in fact, coming in on this side was an archway that was the largest archway anywhere built in the ancient world, anywhere. The largest unsupported archway. And it was just a wonder, and it was a bridge that came down from the temple and went down. It's just unbelievable. And the Romans built a fire under that and caused the whole thing to collapse, and they just stripped everything off here and threw it down here. AD 30, Jesus said, not one stone will be left, and it happened in AD 70. So 40 years later. Remember, 40 is always a number of testing and all that. But did you know even what Jesus said in verse 2, remember Andrew's question was, not one stone prophecy. The place that is in Matthew 24. But the prediction Jesus was going on is actually back in chapter 9 of Daniel. So back up, you're in Matthew, go back to Daniel 9. And this is probably, Daniel 9, 27, is perhaps, if there's one prophetic passage, and I'll start on... Actually, it starts in verse 24, and it goes all the way down through verse 27. Now, look at all the elements. It says in verse 24, 70 weeks are determined. That's interesting. And there will be, in verse 25, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. That's halfway down verse 25 of Daniel 9. And the street shall be built again, and the wall, even in troublesome times. Now, look at verse 26. It says, after 62 weeks, Messiah will be cut off. So verse 26 says, and this is Christ's crucifixion, Messiah, that's Christ. Remember, Messiah's Mashiach is the Hebrew word that's translated in Greek, Christos, or Christ. But Messiah cut off, which is the crucifixion. So it says that in verse 26. Not for himself. In other words, it was a substitutionary atonement. But look at this. This is fascinating. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. So right back here, Christ is going to be crucified, AD 30. That's the first part of the verse. The second part of the verse says that the people that crucify Christ, the crucifiers, who are they? Who actually nailed Jesus to the cross? Romans, yeah. So those people are the Romans. So the people, the crucifiers, look what it says in verse 26, the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city. Who destroyed Jerusalem in AD 70? The Romans. I mean, that's just plain old history. AD 70, Titus, the Roman general, came and took his legions, surrounded the city, starved them to death, basically, until they were just throwing bodies over the wall because people were dying so fast and they didn't have any place to bury them. They were starving. They would go out and let the Romans capture them or kill them because it was worse inside the city than being captured or killed. But in AD 70, look what it says they will do. They will destroy the city and the temple, the sanctuary. And that's exactly what they did in AD 70. Now, what Andrew didn't talk about, but is right there, is it says the people of the prince who is to come. It's interesting, the prince that is to come in the Old Testament is just one, that title, the prince who is to come, is one of 30 plus titles or names of the Antichrist. This one that comes at the end of days and does bad things. And that's one of the centers of prophecy. It says in verse 27, he, who is the he of verse 27? The people of the prince. So the prince is the antecedent for the he. This prince will confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. In the middle of the week, he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering, and on the wings of an abomination. Oh, do you remember Jesus saying in Matthew 24? See, Jesus, Matthew 24, his sermon is totally tied to this Daniel 9 passage. So, back to Andrew's question. Let's not get too far away from his question. Basically, he was asking about prophecy and something about stones and flattened and nothing standing. In the New Testament, that's the key Matthew 24 we just looked at. But there's another one. And since Andrew's not here to tell us what he meant, let's look at the other one. It's in Ezekiel. So now you're in Daniel, back to the book just before it, Ezekiel. And this is probably statistically one of the most phenomenal. In fact, there's a guy named Peter Stoner in the 50s. The 50s, like, you know, 65 years ago, 60 years ago. This man named Peter Stoner wrote a book about probability. And I think it's published by Moody Press or something. It's probably not in print anymore. But he was a statistician. And he was always doing statistical analyses. And he liked using the state of Texas. And he would say the probability of finding, now let's see, I'm not a very good geographer, but there we go. That's kind of Texas. How do you like that? I just know it's the southern county of Oklahoma where I used to live. Oklahoma's up here. And down there is that lower county where they have all the oil. But Stoner would, this Christian statistician, mathematician guy, would, he would say, if you covered Texas, you know, the largest state south of Alaska, if you covered Texas with silver dollars, shows 1950s, I mean, people would have remembered silver dollars then. And he said, you didn't just have them flat, you would cover the state a foot thick. And if you put one red painted silver dollar in the mix, and all of this was a foot thick of silver dollars, he said, statistically, the likelihood that the following set of predictions would all exactly take place. This is one of his in Ezekiel 26, okay? So the probability of Ezekiel 26 happening statistically. First of all, who's Ezekiel? Ezekiel was a companion of Jeremiah and Daniel, so they're buddies. Ezekiel, the prophet, was an unusual character. He was a prophet and a priest. He wasn't a king, or it would sound like Christ, prophet, priest, king. He was a prophet who was formerly a priest before Nebuchadnezzar came and destroyed everything. Nebuchadnezzar came actually three times to Jerusalem. In 586 BC, he took Daniel. In 597, which is prior, remember in BC, the numbers are going up the further you go into the past. So into the past further, this is closer to our time, this is longer ago, he took Ezekiel. And in 605, he came the first time and took a bunch of people. So in the middle deportation, Nebuchadnezzar came to Jerusalem three times. First time, you know, kind of knocked down a few things, took their money, subjugated them, told them don't act up, they acted up. So he came a second time, hauled off a lot more people, including the author of this book, Ezekiel. So in 597, Ezekiel goes off to Babylon. He starts writing about 592, and he goes for about 20 years, till about 570. I mean, this is just basic, what you have to learn when you're in Bible school. And so during his 22 years, a lot of history is happening. First of all, 586, the fall of Jerusalem. In 586, Nebuchadnezzar, as in King Nebuchadnezzar and the fiery furnace and the three men and Daniel the lion's den, that whole book, Nebuchadnezzar destroys Jerusalem. He kills the people, hauls them away to Babylon. That's called the Babylonian captivity. It lasts 70 years. Ezekiel is in there during that time in Babylon. When Nebuchadnezzar got done with Jerusalem in 586, he is headed home, and he says, whoa, got the whole army out here. Might as well do something else. So what does he do? He keeps conquering. He just goes north of Jerusalem to the greatest maritime power on earth at the time. They were called the Phoenicians. If you ever heard of Hannibal and the elephants and Carthage, that's the same crowd. They were the mariners of the ancient world. They sailed the Mediterranean and beyond. They went out into the Atlantic at times. They were really well-known Phoenicians. And their headquarters was called Tyre, T-Y-R-E. And Tyre, you all know Tyre. Hiram, the head of the king of this place, was a friend of David's and supplied David's son Solomon what? Cedars of Lebanon, yeah. Because he was in Tyre, which today is a Palestinian refugee camp. The PLO runs it in Tyre and Sidon, which is in Lebanon today. But Tyre, in the time of the Bible, was one of the wealthiest, most glamorous. I mean, they were the people who had it all. They were the trade people. They took the Egyptian stuff to Rome, or to the Etruscans before Rome and the Greeks, and they were the expert mariners. And now look at chapter 26, because what happens is, in verse chapter 26 of Ezekiel, God has Ezekiel prophesy the doom of Tyre. And he is very, biblical prophecy is usually very, very clear. And it came to pass in the 11th year, on the first day of the month, that the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, because Tyre is set against Jerusalem, all that stuff. Therefore, verse 3, I'm the Lord, am against you, O Tyre, and will cause many nations to come up against you, as the sea causes its waves to come against you. Now, to hear that would be like for us to say, I don't know what you'd think would be an impossible situation, but to say like the Japanese will run out of money or the Swiss will run out of, money because they have all the gold there, all the storage. It was just like blowing smoke for Ezekiel to say that, because Jerusalem was destroyed, smoldering, and the most powerful maritime, I mean, how would you even fight them? Nobody had boats back then. Except they had the monopoly on it. And God says, I'm going to bring many nations against you and cause, as the sea causes the waves to come up, I'm going to send nations to you. So let's just do a quick, if you did a kind of a Wikipedia, which, is mixed reliability. In 1000 BC, that's the time of David, Tyre was great. By the time we get to 586 BC, Tyre ruled, kind of like Britannia. It was kind of like the British Empire. They had colonies all over the place, and they were fearsome. In fact, crucifixion was invented by, most likely, these people. The Carthaginians used it, because Carthage today, Carthage, is in northern Africa. When they excavate the city of Hannibal, they find literally tens of thousands of babies that had been burned alive in their worship of Molech. They were the Molech baby-burning people that imported all their horrible stuff to Jerusalem. So by 586, they were decadent, they were cruel, they were heartless. In fact, every time you built a new building, you buried a baby alive in the foundation as an appeasement to the gods. They were cruel, heartless, kind of like American abortion industry today, right? It's the same thing, only a little more streamlined. But these people were fearsome. I mean, if you can kill a baby without batting an eye, you are rough and tough. And to say that those people would be destroyed when they had the best navy, they had all the Hannibal elephant stuff that we see later and all that went on with the Roman Empire, they were strong. But look what the Lord says. Now, here's the prophecy starting verse 4. The walls of Tyre will be broken down. Okay? To us, that means nothing. You read Herodotus or any of the historians of the time, the walls of Tyre were 15 stories high. That's 150 feet high by 15 feet thick. And so to say that a city that was perched on the edge of the Mediterranean that had 15-story high walls and a fleet moored behind it that could fight you and whisk around their soldiers anywhere was quite an interesting prophecy. I'm sure people chuckled at that. And I will also break down her towers. So ringing the city, there were four towers. So the walls have to come down. The towers have to come down. And then it says, I mean, this is very detailed, very precise. And I will also scrape her dust from her. So there's going to be some rubble removal. You know, somehow they're going to scrape up the dust. And I will make her like the top of a rock for what? A place for the spreading of nets. That would be like saying Manhattan is going to be farmed again and you're going to see cotton fields where all the just it looks like a whole forest of office towers and skyscrapers. I'm talking about here, Manhattan, New York City. If someone came along from a burning city, an occupied person, a loser of a battle, Ezekiel, and say, Manhattan will be leveled, plowed, cotton growing in rows. You'd go, uh-huh, yeah, that's a good one, you know? And flat and nets spread on it. Okay, this is what our friend with the silver dollars said to say. In actually, Ezekiel said it in 592. That's when he wrote chapter 26. Most, you know, that's what this 11th year, maybe sometime after 597 to 592, he wrote that. For him to say that at the height of Tyre's, Phoenicia's power, he said, to say that anyone could knock down those walls, that anyone could continue and knock down their towers, and that anyone that did that would bother to remove the rubble, and that it would get so flat people would be attracted to it and fish and spread their nets to dry. He said the likelihood of that is like 1 times 10 to, I think he said, the 16th or something like that, which is how he got Texas covered with a foot of silver dollars with one red one. That's 1 to 10 to the 16th. The likelihood of you kicking around through the foot of those silver dollars to find the red one. Okay? So how did this happen? Well, basically, Nebuchadnezzar conquers Jerusalem, and in 585, he's headed home, and someone says, hey, why not knock on the doors of that big city? We got our whole army here, and fight him. And he did. And basically, verse 4, to destroy the walls of Tyre, Nebuchadnezzar started a campaign that lasted for 8 years, till about 78. From 585 to 578, for those 7-8 years, he besieged Jerusalem. and fought against Tyre, and the only thing that he was able to do is to break down the walls and the towers. And just as it looked like he was going to get them, they all jumped in their boats, and there was an island off the coast a half a mile, and they just all had another fortress there. And all the Phoenicians just moved by boat, took all their money and everything valuable out of the city, moved to the island a half a mile off the coast, and let Nebuchadnezzar come into an empty city. So he went home and gave up. And so the first two happened. We had this 585 after Jerusalem till 577 with Nebuchadnezzar. And he did one and two of this prophecy. And then nothing happens, and Tyre goes on even more, making money, landing colonies, until guess who comes along? Remember who's next? His name is Alexander the Great. You know, back then people didn't have to have last names. They just were so famous. You know, David, Abraham, Alexander, you know, the Great. And he came along, and he started, they're still rich, they're still powerful, they're still hauling in the loot. And he was conquering the world, and they kept running away on their little boats. And he couldn't, and they'd go to their little island. So Alexander was not to be deterred. And he went and took, he knocked down, and notice what it says here, break down her towers. He will also scrape her dust from her and make her like the top of a rock. Alexander started a campaign, and he continued after he died, because, you know, he died young. His generals finished this off, and they leveled the mainland city, and they took all the rubble to build a 1.5 mile long causeway. And they, is there an E in causeway? There we go. I wish the board would correct my spelling, not my drawing, you know. But he and his generals completely leveled the city of Tyre and actually made it flat, built a causeway, and then flattened the city on the island so completely that there was no evidence that there was ever a city on that island. And today, if you go up the refugee camps, you'll see that island was used, and you can see ancient lithographs. It was used as, what does it say in verse 5? As a place of the spreading of the nets. So in 597, or whenever Ezekiel first said this, chapter 26, it looked impossible. Then it looked like Nebuchadnezzar did something, but he didn't do what the Bible said. But then comes along Alexander, and even though after his death he wasn't there, but his generals finished the job. And to level the city, scrape it off, I mean, all this is just normal history. This isn't in the Bible. You notice none of this is just the prophecies here. But history records that between Nebuchadnezzar, Alexander, and his generals, to the T, this was fulfilled. Which, to me, is fascinating, because if God, you notice that somewhere here, right here, I said in Daniel 9, the same God that predicted that there was going to be the Romans destroying Jerusalem, knocking down the temple, knocking down the walls after they crucified Christ, and that the people of the prince, the Roman people, would be the ones that produce for us this world ruler. And the Bible says this world ruler is going to only allow people to buy and sell with a what? A number. Yeah, the mark, which is a number. Did you know we're already there? I mean, I have a pocket full of numbers, don't you? I mean, 6355, 05, 02, 99, 12, 94, 69. Did you get that? Those numbers on credit cards, you can't buy without numbers nowadays. Try and rent a car without having a number. Try having your paycheck given to you in money. It's electronic transfer. And what's interesting is God said that this world ruler would rule the world basically with digital or numeric buying and selling instead of commodity buying and selling. If I can trade you a silver coin for grain, no one can stop me. But if I can only buy stuff digitally, and if one person basically runs the back office, have you ever gone to Speedway and put in your card and go see cashier? There's something wrong with your card. Doesn't work. You poke it in all you want. How would you like for someone to say, you, Christian, can't buy unless you say you're not a Christian or I'm going to turn your credit card off? That's fine today. There are 3 million preppers in America. That doesn't mean that they wear their pants a certain way or whatever. It means they're preparing for something. But no prepper can prepare at a global level to anybody controlling all of commerce. You cannot buy, you cannot sell without a number that's controlled by the prince of the people that came to crucify Christ and knock down the city of Rome. So basically what I'm saying is that if God predicted through Daniel lived 6 centuries before Christ, 600 years before Christ, actually 500 and some years before Christ. And he predicted detailed what would happen. Christ would come. Christ would be cut off or crucified. The people that crucified Christ are going to destroy the city of Jerusalem and the sanctuary. And the same one that predicted all that says, after him was coming a prince who would digitally control the world. You know what's amazing? The same God that's predicted the future is the only one that's told us about the past. He tells us about our origin, where we came from, our purpose, why we're here, and our destiny. And the same God that wrote prophecy has done all those things. So I'm so glad Andrew asked that question.